Hello, and welcome to the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative to record America's family history in sound. Oral histories are one of the most personal and rewarding ways to preserve family stories. The Tell Me a Story sessions are 45-minute interviews between two people with the assistance of a trained facilitator. Participants will receive a compact disc with the full interview. A copy will be archived at the Midwest Genealogy Center and, with permission, later made available to the public. And now, another story.
There is something in all of our minds that we would like to achieve. Sometimes that achievement may be to climb Mount Everest. It may be to parasail over the Atlantic Ocean. But to athletes, there is such a thing as the perfect game. Don Larson, way back in 1957, I believe, the New York Yankees pitched a no-hit perfect game. 27 batters up, 27 batters down, and this was done in a World Series. At some point, we all kind of see a golfer doing a swing, one that lands 300 yards, a perfect shot right into the cup. Call it a hole in one, but it's really a perfect shot. In bowling, there is something called the perfect game, and this is where for the 12 times that a bowler lands a hand or approaches the lane or pitches the ball, that I all end up in 10 pins falling in succession. 12 throws, 12 strikes. It's a 300 game. And today, the bowler that we're going to be interviewing is one that has done that time and time again. And as we look back into this African-American bowlers, and we look at things from a historical perspective, we have to kind of look gently but clearly into the minds and the feelings of those who have benefited from segregated times. And we have with us today Joe Newsom, who has not only bowled a perfect game, has bowled lots of perfect games, but has been the beneficiary of change. Say hello to us, Joe.
Oh, hi, how you doing?
All right, and tell us a little bit about you. You're a Kansas City native, or tell us about you.
No, I was born in Texas, a little place called Chapel Hill, Texas, which is located 62 miles west of Houston.
And you know it's small when they start using the bigger city as the
kind. Yeah, and about 10 miles to the east side of Brenham, Texas, where they make the Bluebell ice cream.
Excuse me now. And you're from an entrepreneurial family, Joe. Tell us about that. What it's like to be in a family that's black and entrepreneurial.
Well, let me first say that I have 8 brothers, 8 with myself, and I have 3 sisters. And my oldest brother is 74 years old, and we can be thankful that we all are still active, still alive.
Okay.
My dad passed away in 1994, and my mom passed away in 1997. Originally,
Who are you in the birth order?
I'm number 4.
You're number 4.
Yeah, I'm the 4th child, and I'm the 3rd son.
4th child and out of 11 total.
4th out of 11.
Okay.
And I'm the 3rd son. I have 2 brothers and a sister older than I.
Tell us about the entrepreneurial spirit. Most black people are usually not quite entrepreneurs.
Well,
tell us about that.
You know, it started way back. Initially, you know, when I first came to Kansas City, you know, what happened was I had an older brother here, Robert, and he came to Kansas City to live with one of our uncles. So, and being from a small town like we were from, there was nothing there to do once you graduated from the 10th grade.
Hmm.
So, and then after you graduated from the 10th grade, you had an opportunity to go back to Brenham, where they made the Bluebell ice cream at.
So, 10 miles away.
So then we had an option to come to Kansas City to visit, live with our brother Robert. So that's what I did. I came here in 1962 with a 10th grade education. And from that point, I went to Westport High School at night to finish up my
12th grade.
Then after that, I went on and I did not get a degree, but I got some college hours in and some other stuff. And somewhere along the way, my oldest brother, Bob, got into real estate business. And he was working for Harold D. Clopper. And at the time, he had an office, I think, over on 35th or 36th or 34th in Brooklyn area, someplace there. Again, you know, back in 1962 and 63 and 64, that was kind of the suburbs again in that time. Kind of. So anyway, he got into real estate business. And and I went on to, work for Montgomery Wards as a dishwasher, and from a dishwasher to a porter, from a porter to a stocker, and from a first one thing to another one.
Is this each time climbing upward?
Climbing up.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then later on, I had a friend of mine who name was Robert Chambers. He worked for Chicago Title Insurance Company.
Okay.
And then he had asked me whether or not if I wanted to come there, you know, and work at an office down there. I thought, well, you know, why not? Because, again, I was going to get a nickel or dime increase in salary. So that's what I did. But the most important thing about that job was it gave me an opportunity to learn about deeds, legal description, lot sizes, and how to read those things and be able to go over to the courthouse and be able to put together a title of deed.
Okay.
You know, who own a piece of property from A to B to right now. So that was some good knowledge that I learned there.
But you were doing this at a time when you, what was your job title at that time?
What my job title was, I think my title there was, see, we're going back so many years now, I forgot some of this stuff. I think I was what it was called a chain man. What a chain man does, you put together a chain of title. You know, you put it together, and you cannot have a link in your chain because you got to be able to determine that.
So it was there was no interruption in the change of the and that property to another owner.
Yeah, and if you find an interruption on record, then you have to figure out what the interruption were and what caused it.
Okay, so you have to have a perfect line.
Yeah, so that's what I did. So, and then in 1977, I got my real estate license. Now, I already had one brother that was in the real estate business as well. So I got my real estate license, and me and one of my other brothers, again, like I said, I got seven brothers, so we were always brothering up some kind of way. But what we were really waiting on, my brother Travis was in the process of graduating from high school in Brenham, Texas, and he got a scholarship to go to the University of Oklahoma to run track. And he went to the University of Oklahoma to run track, and he got a degree in business for the purpose of coming to Kansas City and being the broker of our real estate office.
All right.
So that's what happened. So then he came to Kansas City, and he was the broker, and we all kind of worked together to some degree, in the real estate field. So, and then later on, my brother Bob became a real estate appraiser. And at the time, as far as we know, that he was the only black in this area that had that type of experience or training. And from that point on, you know, he was pretty much kind of a mentor, a trainer of many of the blacks in the area in order to get their appraisal license. So I sold real estate from 1977 until 1984. In 1984, then that's when I became a real estate appraiser.
Okay.
And of course, at that time, it didn't take much to be an appraiser. You want to be appraised? Okay, this is what you do. You go do it. Even though that was classes that we had to take, as we went along.
Did Did your previous experience as that change?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know that you ran into a situation where you had to describe a legal description. You need to know about lots and blocks and all these type of things. So often I got questions from people in the office. Well, what is this? How do you read this? What does this mean? So and that still has been a big help. So from 1984 until today, that's what I've done full time. Been a real estate appraiser. Been some good years, been some bad ones. But I can't think of anything else I would have rather have done other than what I did and what I do, because it gave me an opportunity to meet a lot of people, see a lot of different houses, style, size, age, condition, and all kind of stuff. So that's what I did. So through the years, what we did, even though we were together,
we
when I say we, I'm speaking of my brothers, because I had my oldest brother Bob, who was a real estate appraiser. My brother Jerry is a real estate appraiser. My brother Ed, my brother Sterling, and then myself. We all are real estate appraisers, so we all see good times together. And we see bad times together. So, and as you know, real estate was really, really, really booming for a while. So like I say, even though we were two together, but we still kind of had our separate little companies within one. So, you know, several years ago, my brother and Jared and I, we shared office space together. And we had 16 appraisers working for us.
Wow.
Appraisers and office staff, you know. And we were going 100 miles an hour, you know, all day, every day, just making as much money as Uncle Sam let us make. Hi, Uncle Sam. So that's what we did.
Correct. And tell me a little bit about, you said brothering up, and then I'll kind of move into how you got into this bowling. But like this brothering up, that's a concept that we probably don't appreciate. I mean, how was that? How did you feel being an individual and being in this brother lineup?
There's no greater feeling when you have the type of brother that I have and you have the type of relationship that we have.
Good.
Absolutely perfect. No fights, no arguments, no cursing, no fussing.
Now, what do you bring that to? What do you owe that to?
Well, probably it would have to come from our mom. And just saying, you know, you treat people the way you want to be treated. And so, and you probably was too scared to get in trouble, probably scared to mess with one another because some other might beat you up or something. But we never had a problem.
Okay.
You know. And one of the things, even today, what we do is when one or the other birthday is here, we all gather together. On a Friday morning at a specified location, and we sit down and have breakfast together. Very we good. Do that right now.
Is that right?
Yeah, so on the 18th of this month, my sister, who lives in Houston, has a birthday, and we're going to get together, and we're going to celebrate her birthday if she's here or not, because we look for a reason to get together.
All right, very
so
good.
That's what we do.
All right, Joseph, it seems like you've kind of caught the times right, you were able to sort of move up and become an entrepreneur and own a business and have brother backup and certainly have great family values and a good business keen mind and whatever. But how'd you get to bowling?
Well, you know, and honestly, I probably really don't know. But I remember when I was working at Montgomery Ward's, this is way back in 65 or 66 or somewhere, I'm not exactly sure. Looked like my brother Sterling and I, we both worked there, and some kind of way there were a bowling league somewhere. I don't remember, someplace on St. John in the pit. I don't know where it was, because, you know, that was no kind of concern of mine. But all I know, we went there, and we got on this bowling league or something, and these guys, and I say these guys, because we was the only black guys that are there, so as I can remember. And these guys was throwing these bowling balls, and they were just doing all kind of tricks, look like. You know, going down the lane, hooking and bagging, and all that kind of stuff. Of course, you know, that was, you know, magic to us. So we did that. Then that just kind of faded away. And then later on, you know, we always went to church. And there were couples at church that we got together with on Saturday night. And we got together and we went out to, we went bowling on Saturday night. Just pick up a ball, go bowling. Nobody knew what they was doing.
At what lane?
We was King Louis.
King Louis,
yeah. So, and we just get together and go bowl, you know, just bowling, you know. Go out and bowl three or four games, go home before midnight, get up and go to church next morning. That's what we did for recreation. We went to work, went bowling, went to church. Went to work, went bowling, went to church. You know, so that was it. So we weren't clubbers.
Yeah.
You know, so so then at some point in there, you know, we began to buy one little bowling ball, our little own bowling shoes. We was tough then. And you just start bowling.
So it was basically an accident. This wasn't all something right.
You have to say it was an accident. Yeah. Now,
well,
now.
I mean, it wasn't in your...
No, it was not, because at this point, you know, I'm thinking, shoot, probably 68, 69 is when we really, 67 and maybe 66, 67, 68, when we really began to do this. How would I have been then, Roy, in 67, 24 years old, 24. So, but that's what we did. And I didn't really join an organized league until 1969.
Okay, now. In this period, I mean, you're dealing with your family, and you're sort of doing this on a Saturday night and whatever. So at what point did you think that you might have something going?
Well, and I think that probably would have been in 1969 when we joined a league.
Okay, so what happened? Tell me that.
Well, we joined this league, and Southside Men's, what it was called at 6 o'clock on Thursday night.
So everybody's bowling now, right? I mean, we've got lots of blacks in bowling.
But even on this particular league, it was not. I think
but
that
immigration is taking. Yeah, you go wherever you want to go and bowl.
Yeah, as far as I know, right. At least we did anyway.
All right.
So, and I think in the Southside Men, there probably might have been 5 or 6 black guys.
Okay.
Maybe 8 or 10, because we had 5 on our team. And so that's how we got started. That's how I got started, rather. And so we go out on Thursday night again, watch these guys throw these balls, and they'd be doing all kinds of tricks and stuff. And you
so
know,
you were fascinated by the...
Well, contrary to what Alex was saying, you know, and I didn't get started that early, you know.
You were late.
Sure, I was late. I was 29 years old when I bowled my first league.
Is that right?
So whereas a lot of the guys that I bowled with, you know, some of those guys went through the junior program, and they had guys to tutor them and to tell them how to stand, how to throw it, and which way to throw it, and all these kind of things. So you're talking about one of those situations being self-made, or being bought up by the bootstraps. What's that old thing?
Yeah,
so, yeah. So that's what he did. That's what I did. And so,
you had no guidance. All this stuff of Alex was talking about
No.
You did it all by yourself.
Yeah. You know, we had. You know, there were a guy named Sam, and he had a little bowling shop over off of 26 in Gillum Road. And we go there and buy a bowling ball. They all were, all the bowling balls are black then. All the balls are black, so it wasn't no giving no red or no purple. You know, you got what he had. And what he would do, he would suggest to you maybe how the ball should be drilled or what weight you need to have and stuff like that. But that was, and he did have a lane there also. He could have a lane and at least let you throw your ball and make sure you come out of it right and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But that was probably the extent of any training that I got from that. You know, but just listening to people's bowl and watching guys bowl.
So how much did you bowl? How much did you practice? How much, you know?
Oh, we should go out there and practice. I don't remember how much, but it's quite a bit, because we can practice for a nickel and dime a game, you know. Sometimes just to bowl for free.
Okay. So when did you know that you got this? I mean, I understand how you got into it. I also understand kind of like how you just sort of drifted upward, and I also understand the concept of self-training and discipline and whatever. But like, what point did you say, okay, I might have something here going other than this appraisership?
Well, actually, I'll have to see if I got any records, but I think when I bowled my first leg, I think I may have averaged like 175 or 80, something like that.
Okay.
And then I kind of progressed a hill onto that around the 200 ever since. And then in I think it was August of 1972 is when I bowled my first 300.
Okay, but before we get to that,
yeah, and I was just trying to look in there and see when the date is, but it's so old, I don't want the date off of it.
Right, we're going to talk about what you get when you get to the ring. But now we're with a 175 bowler, and you're gravitating along in your league. I mean, you know, now, I mean, do people walk up to you and say, you know, like, hey, you're pretty good? I mean, is that what?
No, I told him. I told him I was pretty good.
You told him you was pretty good. Or you showed him you was pretty good.
Both. That's when you go out and tell a guy you beat him.
Yeah. Okay.
So
that's an interesting thing. Now, before integration and whatever, there was this feeling and this concept that, you know, I'll not fight you straight up, but I will show you how good I am. Now, tell me what that feeling was for you.
Right? And actually, when I said that, I told him then I wasn't competing in, you know, in no white or black league. I'm just talking about some of the guys we were just out there horsing around with. You know, and I never experienced some of the stuff some of the pride guys talked about that they did, you know, because I always had a good relationship, you know, with the people that I bowled with, you know, being, you know, black or white. Okay. I always had a good relationship with them.
Right, when did you think you were good? When you would think you were good enough to bowl a 300 king?
Well, I don't think we ever think that we're good enough until it happened, you know. So, the thing is that you go out and if you do something, if it worked, then you try to repeat what you did.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times, regardless how many times you repeat it, then your results is not going to be the same.
What was it like?
The only thing that I remember is that because of the inadequacy of the secretary at that time, that I won't call no name, I almost didn't get my first 300 award. Mm-hmm. And we had to really fight, you know, to get that award, to get some letters written from the ABC and from several other people.
Did you think racial at that point?
No, because it was a black guy who was secretary. So no, you know,
it was not racial.
Yeah, I never thought no, that wasn't the case.
Okay,
good. Yeah. So
all right, so when you roll that, let's say that seventh straight strike, and you know, out of the field to 12, like, you know, were you nervous?
Probably, but I can't remember. Probably.
Okay.
I'm sure. I might have been. And then again, on the other hand, I may have been at that point so many times that I may have just finally crossed over, okay, you know,
so
got
you
past
learned
that stage.
Expected,
okay. Yeah, but I cannot recall a 300 that I ever bowled that at some point you were not nervous.
Okay. Because tell me how many have you bowled? How many 300s?
Honestly, I really don't know, but I know it's over 50. So and they're all not sanctioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them might have been in a tournament that I was participating in. And I bowled a couple in the Fred Brosker tournament, which was not a sanctioned tournament.
Okay.
You know, I bowled some in just regular tournaments that were sanctioned.
But some of them were sanctioned.
The majority of them were. Mm-hmm. The majority of them.
And sanctioned means what for those?
That they were bowled under conditions that was approved by USBC or ABC at the time.
Which means the lanes were...
Been approved, and you were a member of that organization. You have to be, you know, have your ABC card.
What do you think about the bowling? Did you ever bowl with a Mercedes ball?
Never heard of it before.
No. I meant, like, we think of Mercedes as being the top of the line of
cars. Oh, but that case, yeah. I always tried to make for sure I had at least the best that was available that I could afford.
Okay.
I always did it. Make sure that you try to keep the top of the line. You have to make sure that you're prepared to compete with your competitors.
What about shoes?
Shoes? Mm-hmm. I always had bowler shoes. I wore Lynn shoes for years. You know, basically a nice little white shoe that match anything you put on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what I did for years. And a lot of time, He had a couple of pair of bowling shoes. You know.
Do you bow with a wrist?
I bow with a wristband on now because over the years, you end up with kind of a weak wrist. And it just kind of helps you keep your wrist stay strong and help you keep your ball in position to deliver the ball.
Tell me about the times you failed when you bowled 152.
Part of the game.
Part of the game.
So I just say part of the game. I get be a different day the next game or tomorrow.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that I try to tell the guys that I bowl with. That's part of the game, and you have to accept that as being part of the game.
Right. Are you being self-made and kind of like drifting into this league? Has this kind of become your new avocation, your new life? In other words, you're an appraiser over here, successful real estate family, entrepreneur, lots of brothers to back you up. And then over here, are you the only person that's in your family that bowls?
For the most part, I do have a couple other brothers that have bowled and can bowl a little bit, but they don't not
like you.
Not an organized league type person.
Okay, fine.
So,
all right. So this is is this new for you? I mean, when you get this ring, tell me about this ring. Tell me about the first ring. Come on, tell me.
Well, of course, the first ring is this gold ring on a ring here that I got in 1972 that they was giving away.
Okay.
But then after a period of time, because of the amount of awards that were being presented and given, then they began to reduce the quality of them.
Oh.
And then later on, if you wanted the gold ring, then they charge you, $100, $150, $200 for the thing,
Right. So the ring is what you get when you bowl at 300.
Yes, the ring is what you get when you bowl at 300.
And what does the ring say? I mean, what is it? Is it a gold ring? Is it a diamond ring? What is it?
Well, this particular ring that I'm wearing now is a gold ring with a diamond in it. And I think it's real, but sometimes I can see it looking back at me. But now, of course, I do have some that don't look back at me.
You're a little doubtful.
Yeah. So, but also, and by being a member, I'm a member of the National Bowling Association along with the USBC. And the National Bowling Association, that is a organization that was formed back in the early 40s as well, when the blacks could not participate in the ABC.
Okay.
So then the National Bowling Association was formed then. So we have an opportunity to be a member of the National Bowling Association as well as the USBC. And you can get awards from both.
Are you secretly fighting this cause for black people?
So when you say the cause, what are you making reference to first?
Whatever cause you...
Well, the cause that I'm fighting against is just organization.
Say what that means.
Just trying to make sure that we stay focused and we stay maintained and just try to pass on to the young people of today the reason why they have what they have.
And the we in this case is?
Blacks.
Blacks, okay.
Yeah. Because earlier I think someone said that they have no idea what we've gone through. And I tell them that every day. I got 2 daughters and 3 granddaughters. So, and by the way, both of my daughters was fairly decent bowlers as well.
Excuse me. Where'd they get that from?
They probably just looked up on it. Plus my wife was a pretty decent bowler as well as herself.
Okay.
So, but anyway, just trying to, what I do now is try to work with the junior program as well, trying to keep them focused and let them know, what's going on, and so we can keep bowling alive. Because if we don't motivate them and keep them going, then the sports will die out.
So we begin to wrap this up. I've seen you bowl. Do you still feel like you're in your heyday?
I tell them that anyway.
Okay. But do you feel it?
I have a great time bowling.
Okay. I know you're in a league.
I'm in a couple leagues, and I still have a great time bowling, and I have a great fellowship with the people that I bowl with, and they know that I'm not as good as I used to be, but on the other hand, they don't take me for granted.
All right, that's a good. I wish we were at the end because that would be a great name. We're going to have an event here on October the 29th. It's an unusual event. We're going to sort of celebrate African-American bowlers, past, present, and future. You're obviously somewhere on the cusp between present and past. What do you want to get out of this event? Tell me what attracts you to this event. Tell me why we're sitting here making historical reference to this.
Again, we just need to make for sure that bowlers of the past is recognized, and that when I say the past, you know, I'm talking of bowlers from the 90s and the 80s and 70s and a lot of the guys, you know, prior to that time, you know, then, you know, I did not know, and I may have bowled with them in their final years of bowling. But hopefully that we'll put together something that's going to motivate bowlers, motivate the young bowlers, and leave something behind that they can see what happened in the past. So that's what we're hoping to happen. And I'm not exactly for sure what the final curtain call is going to be on this, but everything that I could do to help promote this and motivate this, this is what I'm going to do.
Right. So this is kind of your legacy.
Absolutely.
It's kind of your opportunity to connect the past with the present. I want you to know that every time I see you, every time I talk to you, I learn something, but more importantly, I gain a whole lot of respect for your keenness and obviously your take chargeness, but more importantly, the responsibility that you undertake for no reason. It fits mm-hmm. with your home life. It fits with your family upbringing. It fits with your entrepreneurial spirit. And I notice that when we have something that if you say you're going to get it, it's there. If you say I'll do that next time, you're there. And I'm just saying that, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that you would be as good in bowling as you are in other things that you've undertaken. And so it's been quite a pleasure to talk to you today. And I'm sorry we have to get to know each other through strange kind of ways, but I'm definitely glad to know you.
Well, we probably would have met on the lane somewhere along the way, and we would have got a chance to meet each other that way. So for to remain in good spirit, you know, this may have been the best way to meet.
Very good. Thank you.